notes. I agree with you, Grace, that she was probably more interested in Jeff prior to Amanda's disappearance than she ever let on. But I believed her when she said she and Amanda smoothed things over after the blow-up at the Lady Form offices.
Really? Grace asked. That's a whole lot of money to put behind you with one champagne lunch and a box of gym clothes.
If they were feuding, would Megan still be her maid of honor? Alex paused. What did you think, Lori? A few people have mentioned Amanda's illness, but this is the first time anyone tried to explain how it really did change her. That was the part of the conversation that Lori had been replaying in her head for the last half hour. The way Megan described the transformation in her friend sounded completely authentic. And as her friend, she may have been in a better position to recognize the change than either Amanda's family or even her fiancé. For the first time, Lori believed it really was possible that Amanda had wanted to break free. Maybe she ran away, as Megan believed. But maybe she told Jeff she didn't want to go through with the wedding. And if that happened, they were right back where they started, with a finger pointed at Jeff. The missing rings, Lori said suddenly. I didn't think much of it when Jeff first mentioned them, but Megan made a good point that it's quite a coincidence that they went missing during their stay at the resort. Jeff said he assumed an employee slipped them from the safe during the chaos, but that would be quite a bold move. To be caught with wedding bands belonging to a missing woman would make that person a prime suspect in her disappearance.
And wedding bands aren't worth much compared to what many of the guests probably lock in their safes, Jerry added. Megan's right. They were more likely to be taken as a keepsake than loot.
It really got to me when Megan looked into the camera and said she loved Amanda. Wouldn't that be amazing if Amanda saw our show and contacted her family?
Oh, boy, Grace said. You really bought her bull. Hook, line, and sinker.
2 days into filming, Lori thought, and I don't feel any closer to the truth. 43.
Grandpa, come in with us.
Timmy and four other kids were immersed in an epic round of Marco Polo.
Jake's dad says he'll play if we get another grown-up.
Leo scanned the pool area. A man in his mid-40s caught his eye and subtly shook his head, a pleading expression in his eyes. Jake's father, as Leo expected, had been looking for a way to avoid getting chased by a pack of children in the water.
I think you guys have taken over enough of the pool on your own.
As the rhythmic chants of Marco Polo continued, Leo smiled to himself and took another sip of his piña colada. Lori wouldn't approve of the calories, but he felt entitled to a little celebration. When he and Timmy had left Alex's suite, Lori, Alex, Jerry, and Grace were all bouncing around the various theories of what happened to Amanda. But Leo was ready to close the case. The more he thought about it, Jeremy Carroll had to be their man. Leo had felt the old familiar kick in the gut when you're certain you've discovered the missing link in the investigation. Usually you find it within 24 hours. The spouse gets caught in a lie, or one of the victim's colleagues fails to show up for work the next morning. But when the key to the case is a minor player in the victim's life, the landscaper or the grocery store bag boy, or an intern working for the wedding photographer, it can take years to make the connection. Jerry said that the phone call to Jeremy had gone well. He accepted the apology and seemed to go along with Jerry's explanation that this morning's visit to his house was a routine research visit clumsily conducted by two overeager staffers. With Jeremy feeling safe, Lori and Alex could finish interviewing the rest of the show's participants, but then Leo would convince his daughter to go to the local police with what they knew. Leo already had an idea about using Jeremy's probation officer to search his house. If they found pictures of Amanda, and Leo knew they would, a good detective could use them to get a confession. Leo felt the old police muscles working again. He could envision every piece of a renewed investigation falling into place. He had no regrets about retiring to help Lori raise Timmy, but he would never stop missing the job.
Now that Timmy is getting older, he thought, I might think about doing some private detective work on the side. I'd be good at it.
He closed his eyes and felt the sun warm his face. As his thoughts wandered, he remembered Lori mentioning that Amanda had organized prayer vigils for a girl who was killed at her college. He wondered if the case was ever solved. Maybe that could be Lori's next cold case. He reached into Timmy's beach bag, pulled out his iPad, and connected to the hotel's Wi-Fi. He couldn't remember the woman's name, so he searched for missing student Colby College. Her name was Carly Romano, a 20-year-old sophomore, putting her 1 year behind Amanda and her friends at the time of her disappearance. She was from Michigan and was last seen at an off-campus party. No one saw her leave, but the assumption was that she tried walking back to campus alone. She was missing for 2 weeks before they found her body, strangled, in Messalonskee Lake. Leo looked up to make sure Timmy was still okay in the pool. He was convinced these kids were going to keep playing until they passed out from exhaustion. He continued to click through the news results. As far as he could tell, no one had been arrested and no suspect had ever been named by police. He looked up the phone number for the police department in Waterville, Maine, where Colby College was located, and emailed it to himself along with the name Carly Romano.
I may not be ready to open my own private detective business, he thought, but that doesn't mean I can't do a little independent research now.
44.
Are we really going to let them drink scotch during their interview?
Jerry was staging the bar table just so in the cocktail lounge. From the right angle, the cameras would be able to catch both the dark wood of the hotel bar and the sunshine and palm trees waiting just outside.
Trust me, Lori said. This is a place where Nick and Austin will feel most at home. That's what matters most, which means giving them their beverage of choice.
Lori had decided to question the two friends together. They seemed to open up around each other, and that was what she wanted. As for wardrobe, Lori couldn't have hoped for more if she'd selected their clothing herself. They both showed up wearing tan summer suits with open-collared bright blue shirts. The only difference was the pattern of their pocket squares. Though their clothes were nearly identical, they looked nothing alike. Nick was strikingly handsome and fit, one of those men who wore a suit well. Austin was at best average-looking, with the early signs of a paunch over his belt. His suit was impeccably tailored, but it did little to boost his overall appearance. She remembered what the mother of one of her friends had observed about her daughter's date. He does not yet look comfortable in his Paul Stewart suit.
Let's get straight to the point, Alex said once they were filming. By all accounts, you two are successful, eligible bachelors. Even our assistant on the show says you can't help but flirt with every woman you encounter. As the saying goes, birds of a feather flock together. Was your friend Jeff ready to settle down with Amanda?
Lori wasn't surprised when Nick took the lead. He was definitely the alpha male of the pair.
Absolutely, he said with confidence. Look, Jeff and I were tight from the second we were paired up as college roommates, but he was never a wingman. And can you explain for our viewers what that means? Alex asked. Oh, yeah, sure.
Nick and Austin exchanged an amused glance.
A buddy when you're out talking to women. A partner in the hunt, so to speak.
Lori wanted to edit both of them out of the show entirely. No wonder she had always avoided the dating scene.
Jeff wasn't like that? Alex asked.
Definitely not, Austin said, trying to get a word in. In college, he was focused on his studies. He'd hang out mostly in groups.
What about later, once he was a lawyer in New York?
Austin clearly didn't know the answer. Nick was the one who was closer to Jeff.
He'd go out on the occasional date, Nick said, but nothing serious. I was actually the one who got into a serious relationship for a while.
Melissa, Austin said. That didn't last for long.
True. I had one misstep at a buddy's bachelor party. Melissa found out about it and was gone. I haven't tried it again, but hey, Unlike some people here, at least I gave it a shot. Anyway, once Jeff started seeing Amanda, she was all he talked about.
But weren't they on and off for a while? Alex asked.
At first, Nick said. One or the other would be so busy at work that they'd shift the relationship to the back burner. But wow, once they started going out for real and then Amanda got sick, every minute he wasn't at work, he was with her. When she told him she had cancer, he asked her to marry him the next day.
What about after she was sick? Alex asked. Did you ever see them fight?
They argued like any other couple, Austin said, but he would never hurt her.
Nick shot a disapproving glance to his friend.
Trust me, whatever happened to Amanda, Jeff had nothing to do with it. He was crushed when she went missing.
Until he became involved with Megan, Alex said. A flash of anger crossed Nick's face.
That's not fair. Was the guy supposed to become a monk for the rest of his life? Is it that surprising that he'd fall for someone Amanda also loved and respected?
You'll have to forgive Nick, Austin observed. He's fiercely protective when it comes to Jeff. Lori thought she detected a note of jealousy in Austin's voice.
Now, you've both said that you last saw Amanda around 5 o'clock after you finished group photographs.
Both confirmed the same timeline they'd provided to police. After the photo shoot, they'd gone to the bar for an hour and then to their rooms. A little before 8, they met in the lobby and went to dinner at the Steak and Fin, finishing around 10. Henry left while they stayed for an after-dinner drink there. Then they had a nightcap in Jeff's room and went to their rooms around 11.
It's our understanding that you were down here around the same time Amanda and her girlfriends were coming back to the hotel. Did you cross paths with them?
Nick shook his head.
No, I didn't see Amanda again after they took pictures.
Austin gave the same answer. Lori listened intently as Alex hammered questions at them.
So you two fun-loving bachelors left Jeff's room and went to bed around 11 o'clock. Isn't that a little on the early side for both of you?
We'd been out late the night before. We'd been in the sun all day. We had plenty to drink before dinner, at dinner, and then in Jeff's room.
Nick turned to Austin. I don't know about you, but I was beat.
As usual, Austin quickly agreed.
I'd had enough. I went straight to my room and to bed.
Okay, let's go back to when you two were alone with Jeff in his room. You have both told me previously that Jeff expressed reservations about marrying Amanda. What did he actually say?
I jokingly asked him if he was getting cold feet, Nick said. We were both astonished when he said yes.
And what was said after that?
This time it was Austin who answered.
Jeff said that Amanda wanted him to change jobs, that he was too good of a lawyer to waste his time working for peanuts at the public defender's office. Jeff told her that he liked being a public defender and helping people, and he was really good at it.
What was your response to that? Alex asked.
We laughed it off, Nick said. I told him getting married always means she's going to start managing your life. Get used to it.
And what was Jeff's response?
He laughed with us, Nick said, but we got the impression he was sorry he had started this conversation. It was right after that that we said goodnight and headed to our rooms.
So you went to your respective rooms at 11 o'clock and you contend that you stayed in your rooms all night? Is that right?
Yes, they both answered.
And as far as you know, Jeff was not planning to leave his room after 11?
That's right.
And is it fair to say no one can confirm that you were in your rooms for the night beginning at 11 o'clock, which is approximately the last time anyone ever saw Amanda? A flash of anger came over Austin's face.
I guess not.
Nick nodded in agreement.
Were you aware at the time that in her will, Amanda had left Jeff her $2 million trust fund?
We found out about that after she disappeared, Nick said.
Do you think Amanda would have told Jeff about his potential inheritance?
They looked at each other.
It's entirely possible, Austin said quietly.
Lori could tell that they both desperately wanted to vouch for their friend, but they couldn't. There was no getting around one basic fact. Jeff had the most to gain by Amanda's disappearance.
45.
Mom, those ladies over there are drinking blue martinis.
Timmy was pointing to a group of four women. Their drinks were the color of dishwashing liquid.
You wouldn't want one of those. You like martinis dry.
Alex's eyes sparkled with amusement behind his glasses.
Timmy certainly does know his mother.
Lori and Alex had postponed their plans for a dinner alone at a Michelin 3-star restaurant after Timmy pleaded to go to the hotel's sushi restaurant. Leo could not stand the thought of eating raw fish. He called it sea slime. Timmy, on the other hand, was even more adventurous with a sushi menu than Lori. But she suspected that her son's excitement about this particular restaurant was less about food than about the two L-shaped aquarium bar counters where live fish swam beneath the glass. Alex was about to check in with the hostess when Timmy asked if they could sit at the bar.
"You're always saying we should try new experiences," he argued. "We don't have this back home."
Alex broke the bad news.
"You're a little young for the bar, buddy. Try again in about 12 years.
I can't wait to be old enough to sit at the bar.
Just what a mother wants to hear, Lori said dryly.
I don't want him to end up like those two barflies, Austin and Nick.
Once they were at the table, Alex said, Speaking of the two Romeos, what did you make of their interview today? She shrugged.
They're exactly as Sandra described them. I don't get the appeal, personally, but I know Brett will be happy. At least they're entertaining for television.
Enough about those two, Alex sighed. So Leo's already convinced the photography intern was involved.
Without new facts, Lori wasn't eager to revisit this topic.
I know you think he's jumping to conclusions, she said. Maybe we should leave it on the back burner for now.
Later, as they walked through the lobby, Timmy asked if he could sleep in Grandpa's room tonight. Lori found herself happy to have even more time to spend with Alex. 46. Lori was shocked the next morning when Charlotte Pierce arrived on set at the courtyard behind the hotel. She wore an impeccably tailored white suit with a black silk shell. Her hair and makeup were camera perfect. This did not look like the same woman she'd met in the office at Lady Form.
Don't look so surprised,
Charlotte said, perching herself comfortably on the love seat they had staged for the occasion.
You didn't think I'd go on national television looking like the ugly duckling, did you?
Alex took his place, nodded, and the cameras began to roll. 5 minutes later, Lori checked her watch. Charlotte had already recited the same information she'd given Lori when they met in New York. She was a businesswoman who was used to communicating efficiently. But part of Alex's talent was to introduce questions that his subjects hadn't anticipated.
What was it like being Amanda Pierce's sister? He asked casually.
I have no idea what you mean by that. It's like asking me what it's like to breathe. She was the only sister I ever had.
Yet I sense in you a woman who could, in fact, describe what it's like to breathe if someone asked you the question.
She gave him a half smile. Lori could almost hear her deciding to play along.
Fine. It was like being the weed next to the rose. In any other family, I would have been a superstar. I graduated at the top of my class from the University of North Carolina. I'm a pretty nice person. I work hard. But Amanda was special. Men wanted to marry her. Women wanted to be her. She knew how to please people.
Jeff's friends sensed that you weren't especially happy about the wedding. Disinterested was the word one of them used.
Well, first of all, Charlotte waved her hands dismissively, Jeff's friends are idiots. Second of all, I wasn't disinterested. I was worried. And not about Amanda. I thought Jeff was the one making a mistake. I loved my sister, but I was probably the only person who really knew her. She looked like a princess from a fairy tale, with bluebirds brushing her hair, but she was cunning, ambitious, and there's nothing wrong with that, but she hid it behind this perfect, gentle facade.
Lori found herself fascinated by Charlotte's description. It felt utterly honest.
So why were you worried about Jeff? Alex asked.
Because he had no clue what he was getting himself into. He started dating Amanda, and then almost immediately she became very sick. Weak, she added sorrowfully. It was the only time in her life when she was vulnerable, but if anything, the experience only hardened her. I can tell you this, she was going to put him through the ringer. She was going to change him the way she changed Lady Form. Her idea of a successful husband was not a public defender.
Alex leaned toward Charlotte. So do you suspect Jeff Hunter in your sister's disappearance?
She paused a long time before answering.
I guess that depends.
On what?
On whether he figured out that if he married Amanda, he'd be under her thumb, as I always was.
47. Leo woke up feeling completely rested.
This bed is great, he thought.
It had been 10 years since Eileen passed. Since then, it was only on trips with Lori that he slept somewhere other than in his own bed or in Lori's guest room. He realized it was probably time to buy a new mattress. Maybe he'd think about it when they were back in New York. He looked at the clock. It was already 10 a.m. He saw a note beneath the door that joined his room to Lori and Timmy's. He felt his hamstrings ache as he bent down for it. At 64 years of age, he was in good shape, but needed to stretch more. "Figured I'd let you two sleep in," the note read. Timmy was getting older. He could sleep until noon if undisturbed. Leo walked over to the small desk in the corner, opened the laptop Lori had bought him for his birthday, and clicked on the internet browser. He could spend a few minutes working on his pet project before waking his grandson for a late breakfast. He used two fingers to type Facebook.com into the search window. Grace was the one who was teaching him how to cyberstalk, as she called it. When he was on the job, gathering background information had required knocking on doors and pounding the pavement. These days, people posted their entire lives, including what they ate for breakfast, on social media. He typed Carly Romano into the search window of Facebook. He read recently that it was increasingly common for families and friends to maintain pages of those who had passed as a place for loved ones to post memories. Sure enough, he found her wall, with a posting as recent as 2 months ago, from a Jenna Romano. Happy birthday, sis. You're still in my heart. XOXO. He had called the police in Waterville and confirmed that Carly's case was still unsolved. According to the detective he spoke to, the primary suspect was her high school boyfriend back in Michigan. The two had tried a long-distance relationship during their freshman year, but Carly broke things off when she returned to campus for her sophomore year. He didn't take the news well, but police had never been able to build a case against him. It seemed like a good case for Lori's show. Leo clicked through the photographs on Carly's profile, searching for one of the old boyfriend. He checked the dates. He was still browsing the college years. He needed to keep scrolling back to high school. He couldn't help but notice that Carly looked happy and lively in every photograph. She had thick, dark hair and big brown eyes. She seemed to always be smiling. He was scanning the pictures so quickly that he almost missed it. A familiar face. He flipped back two pages. The caption on the photograph read, DJ Night at the Bob Inn. Carly looked straight at the camera. The man next to her in the booth had his arm around her. He was younger, Leo thought to himself, but that's definitely him. Younger, but familiar. He spotted him two more times in other photographs taken within a few days of this one. He clicked over to his email and found the production schedule that Jerry had sent everyone prior to the trip. Alex was interviewing Charlotte at 9 a.m. in the courtyard behind the hotel, with Kate to follow at 10:30. If he hurried, he could find Lori on a break in between.
Leo waited until he saw Charlotte Pierce leave the set.
Lori smiled when she saw him, but then a moment of panic crossed her face.
Dad, where's Timmy?
He's fine. I woke him up and he's in your room getting ready for breakfast.
They had lived for 5 years in the shadow of a killer's threat that he would someday return to kill both Lori and her son. That kind of fear doesn't fade easily.
I think Alex may have been right when he said I was jumping to conclusions about Jeremy Carroll. You need to see this.
He opened his laptop screen. Lori's mouth opened in surprise.
Is that? Oh my God, it is.
He clicked to the other two photographs.
His arms around her here, and check out the way he's looking at her in this one. I think Jeff was dating Carly Romano. Amanda may not have been his first victim.
Forty-eight. Jerry was waving in Lori's direction.
Is everything okay? We're ready to go over here.
They had scheduled Charlotte Pierce and Kate Fulton in back-to-back interview sessions.
Just a second.
She turned to Leo and said,
Dad, let's not share this discovery yet. If word gets back to Jeff that we've connected him to Carly, he might panic. We're supposed to question him this afternoon.
Leo nodded.
I agree.
Lori approached the set, smiling calmly at Kate, and then explained she just needed to speak to Alex briefly before they began. Alex knew her well enough to know that something unexpected had occurred. They stepped aside, out of earshot of the others.
Remember how I told you that a girl was killed near campus when they were all in college? She asked.
He nodded.
Dad found some photographs of Jeff and Carly together online. It looks like they may have dated.
How come no one ever mentioned that? Alex asked quickly.
Lori shrugged, still trying to process the new information herself.
The girls probably didn't know. Kate said they weren't friends with Carly, so they weren't close to Jeff yet. But Jeff's friends presumably knew.
Should I ask Kate? Or maybe we should just wait until we have him on camera.
Don't ask Kate anything about this. I want to make sure we catch Jeff off guard later.
Grace was making her way toward them, her tanned legs revealed by an impossibly short mini dress.
How are we doing over here? I told Jerry to calm down, but you did look a little worried.
Grace's ability to read Lori was almost eerie.
We're all set, Alex said confidently.
He reached over and squeezed Lori's hand.
Don't worry. Alex is a pro, Lori reminded herself. He'll handle this perfectly.
Now, Kate, you said Amanda expressed doubts about going through with the wedding. Can you tell me exactly what she said? Alex asked pointedly.
Kate pressed her lips together, appearing to concentrate deeply.
I don't recall every word, but we were alone in the pool, and she was asking whether I ever wondered if I got married too young. She wanted to know if I had regrets, if I would have experienced more in life if I hadn't, that kind of thing. She even asked if I thought it was too late to call things off.
That sounds like more than last-minute nerves, Alex said. She actually mentioned the possibility of canceling the wedding?
She didn't say she wanted to cancel, but yes, I remember she said, how bad would it be to pull the plug at this point? I told her it was normal to be nervous, but that she shouldn't go through with a wedding just to avoid upsetting other people.
If this is true, Kate, you're the only person we know of to whom Amanda expressed her reluctance. Pardon me for saying this, but wasn't Megan closer to her than you were? She was the maid of honor, after all. Why wouldn't Amanda have disclosed these concerns to her?
She shrugged. Maybe because Megan was also friends with Jeff? She might have been worried Megan would tell him.
Are you sure that's the only explanation? Alex persisted. Megan made it sound as if she and Amanda were extremely close friends. Wouldn't Amanda trust her with such an important confidence?
Kate cleared her throat.
It's possible that over the years I may have let it slip that, yes, I did used to wonder if I married too young.
that I would picture how things might have been different if I had ventured off on my own for a while. But I told her when she asked if I loved my husband and children, how could I possibly regret them? Later, when I asked whether she was seriously having second thoughts about marrying Jeff, she was a bit evasive.
How so? Alex asked.
Lori leaned forward, not wanting to miss a single facial expression or syllable. She said that something had come up. She was very vague, and that she needed to learn more about it before making a final decision.
What exactly did she need to learn?
I have no idea. That's all she would say.
Was it something about Jeff? Alex suggested. Was she planning to talk to him?
I honestly don't know, Kate said.
Alex turned and looked to Lori to see if he should press any further. She gave him a small head shake, indicating not to push. She didn't want Kate to tip off Jeff that they were leaning in his direction. Alex was bringing the session to a close when Lori saw Sandra Pierce walking quickly toward the hotel lobby, a handkerchief in her hand, her husband one step behind her. What was this all about? Seconds later, Amanda's brother Henry emerged from the same door and ran toward Lori.
Mom asked me to find you. The police said they found a body that they believe is Amanda's.
The detective's name was Marlene Henson. Lori remembered Sandra mentioning her when she first came to Lori's office. She was short, barely 5 feet tall, with long red hair and round, full cheeks. She stood with her feet hips distance apart, sturdy like a tank.
Are you sure you don't want to keep this strictly within the family, Sandra? The detective asked.
Lori detected a hint of a southern accent in her voice. The entire Pierce family was gathered in the living room of Walter's suite. Lori suddenly felt all eyes on her and Alex, standing next to each other near the door. They were the interlopers.
I want Lori and Alex here, Sandra affirmed. Their show is the reason we may have finally found Amanda. I know they're committed to helping us.
But they're also reporters, Sandra. There are things we can't divulge to the public without jeopardizing the investigation.
We're not typical reporters, Lori said. Anything you say in this room will remain between us for now. You have my word.
And unlike the police, Alex said, we have agreements with everyone in the wedding party to speak to us voluntarily. No arrests, no Miranda warnings. That could come in handy.
Detective Henson looked one more time at Sandra and appeared satisfied. Sandra's eyes were still bloodshot and puffy from crying, but she seemed ready to hear the details. Walter put his hand around her shoulder. Her voice remarkably calm, Sandra asked,
Do you believe you have found my daughter's body?
Allow me to explain the events that brought us here today. A phone call came into the station house last night, a few minutes before midnight. The caller's voice was muffled. At this point, we're not even certain if it was a man or a woman. The caller provided specific information about the location of your daughter's body. Of course, we tried to trace the call, but it came back to a phone you could buy and throw away.
Walter pursed his lips.
That was over 12 hours ago. No one thought to tell us?
The department wanted to investigate first. I didn't want to distress you if it was a crank call, but we acted on it immediately. The address the caller provided was for a parking lot across the street from St. Edward's Church, which is 2 miles from here. We checked the records. That parking lot was being resurfaced at the time your daughter disappeared. The instructions were very specific regarding where the body would be found. We had GPR, that's ground-penetrating radar, out there in the middle of the night. Based on what we saw on radar, we began excavation of the parking lot at sunrise and unfortunately did locate remains at that location. We'll do further testing to confirm if they belong to your daughter, but we found these on the left ring finger.
Detective Henson handed Sandra a photograph of 2 platinum rings, a classic Tiffany-style diamond engagement ring, and a matching wedding band. The setting was caked in dirt.
I think these are hers, Sandra said. The engagement ring was engraved, A and J.
Detective Henson finished the phrase with her. Semper Amamus. It means, let us always love, in Latin, Sandra explained, choking back a sob. It's definitely our daughter. It's my baby. It's Amanda.
Walter wrapped both his arms around her, and she leaned her head on his shoulder.
I'm so sorry to have to tell you this, the detective said softly. I'll give your family some time alone. I've always hoped there might be a different ending.
50. On the way to the hotel elevator, Lori asked Detective Henson if they could have a moment.
Detective, there's something you need to know about the wedding band that you found with Amanda's body. Jeff told us that when he got back to New York, he couldn't find the rings in his luggage. He said that with all of the distress over Amanda's disappearance, he hadn't realized they were missing.
I was wondering why she would have been wearing the band before she was actually married.
She wouldn't have been, Alex said. And here's the thing. Both the bride and groom's rings were supposedly being kept in Jeff's room safe prior to the ceremony. And one of Amanda's friends just told us that Amanda seemed to be having second thoughts about the wedding. She said there was something she needed to find out before she made a final decision about whether to go through with the ceremony.
Detective Henson raised her eyebrows.
Well, that certainly is interesting. Sandra already told me about the will. Now that we've found her body, Jeff will finally get his money without having to call attention to himself by asking a court to declare her legally dead.
Lori saw the pieces of the puzzle falling together. If Amanda went up to Jeff's room that night, after their separate parties, she might have wanted to try on her ring, maybe as a test to see how she felt about it. If she changed her mind and decided to call things off, a fight might have ensued. Jeff could have killed her and buried the body without remembering to remove the ring. As usual, Alex was following her logic step by step.
When he realized his mistake, filing an insurance claim for the stolen rings after he got back to New York could have been a way to cover for the fact that her wedding band was missing. But he never filed a claim.
The detective smiled.
I appreciate the information, but you should leave the police work to us. Are you sure about that, Detective? Alex asked swiftly. Because we're supposed to question your number one suspect in half an hour, and for now, he has no idea you found Amanda with that ring on her finger. And rest assured, I'm going to ask him about that.
51. Jeff looked handsome in a tan summer suit and plaid bow tie. They had asked him to wear something similar to what he had planned to wear for the wedding ceremony. He was showing Alex the beachside pergola where they were supposed to exchange vows in front of their family and closest friends.
It's a truly beautiful setting, Alex observed. I can't resist asking about your somewhat unusual choice of footwear.
One of the videographers moved forward with a handheld camera to get a shot of Jeff's sandals.
Amanda loved the idea of being on the beach for an afternoon wedding, he said, reminiscing, but was worried about wearing heels in the sand. She was thrilled when I suggested that we both wear flip-flops for the occasion and encourage our guests to do the same. Then she could change into her white satin Jimmy Choo's for the reception.
Lori smiled conspiratorially to the woman who handed her the bottle of water she'd requested. Detective Henson had looked like the result of a casting call for a police detective when she was delivering the bad news to the Pierce family. But clad in blue jeans and an under-suspicion t-shirt, she now blended right in with the rest of the crew. Alex had been the one to convince her that it was in the police department's interest not to disrupt the production schedule. So far, the police had been able to prevent the news about the discovery of a body beneath the concrete of a parking lot from leaking to the media. If Jeff was the one who called in the anonymous tip, he might know they had already conducted an excavation. But he would have no way of knowing for certain that they had located either Amanda's body or the wedding ring. They still had the upper hand. Jeff seemed comfortable in front of the cameras, telling Alex once again how much he admired his skills as a lawyer.
We'll see if you still like me when we're finished here, Alex said wryly.
Let's start by getting something clarified up front. You married Amanda's best friend, Megan, just 15 months after you were supposed to marry Amanda. You must have known that was going to raise some eyebrows.
Of course we did, Alex. That's why we didn't have a big wedding and kept the news relatively private. But we were deeply in love. Getting married to each other was a way to remind ourselves that life needed to move on. We wanted to move on together.
You don't think that sounds cold?
Maybe it does, but it didn't feel cold to either of us. We both loved Amanda. It was losing her that brought us together as a couple. We helped each other through the grief.
So you're officially going on the record to say there was nothing going on between you and Megan prior to Amanda's disappearance?
I swear on my very life, he said, holding up one hand as an oath.
Your wife told us that Amanda changed after she survived her illness, that she developed a harder edge, was less patient. I think she even used the word selfish. Amanda's own sister echoed the sentiment. That must have placed some strain on your relationship.
I doubt Megan meant to use that particular word, but yes, it's fair to say that Amanda was a different person once she was past the treatment. Who wouldn't be affected by having a brush with death at such a young age? If anything, it made me admire her even more. She was determined to live her life to its fullest.
We've heard from one of your friends that the two of you would sometimes argue.
I mean, sure, like any couple, but nothing unusual. Look, it's true that our relationship wasn't perfect, and that was related to her getting past the illness. We really fell in love while she was sick. Once she was better, she was less dependent on me, and sometimes it was unclear how our lives fit together. In a crazy way, it was almost like there was a void without the illness.
Amanda even spoke to Kate about the possibility of calling off the wedding.
Jeff appeared surprised by the assertion.
I can't imagine why. We were both so excited to be husband and wife.
Amanda told her that something had come up and that she needed to find out more. Are you certain that you did not see Amanda the night after you separated for your bachelor and bachelorette parties?
Of course I'm certain.
I want to shift gears and talk to you about your wedding bands. Were you holding on to them until the ceremony?
Jeff seemed completely unfazed by the question.
Yes, they were in the safe in my hotel room, but were stolen at some point during our stay.
When was the last time you recall seeing them?
Let's see. I guess it was the same day Amanda disappeared. The photographer was taking some early pictures of the bridal party and snapped a couple of stills of the rings up in my room.
And you returned them to the safe afterward?
Yes, I'm sure of it.
And Amanda wasn't in your room any time after that?
No, you're asking so many questions about those rings. They weren't particularly valuable. I couldn't have afforded expensive ones. Is there a reason you're so interested?
A chill ran down Lori's spine. Was Jeff testing them?
As Lori watched Alex's face, she made a mental note never to challenge him to a poker match. He was absolutely unreadable.
Megan suggested that Amanda may have taken them as mementos.
Jeff nodded, apparently satisfied by the explanation.
She's mentioned the possibility to me, too. I think she truly wants to believe that Amanda's out there somewhere, churning butter on a farm in Montana. Wouldn't that be nice?
Amanda's not the only woman you've known who disappeared, is she?
What kind of question is that? Of course she is.
We've been looking into the murder of a woman named Carly Romano. She was a sophomore at Colby, 1 year behind you. She was missing for 2 weeks before her body was found. The medical examiner determined she was strangled.
Isn't this a photograph of you with Carly, taken 3 months before her death?
Jeff's face flushed with anger.
You can't possibly be suggesting.
All I did was ask a question, Jeff.
This is crazy. Colby's tiny. 1,800 students total. Everyone basically knew everyone.
But your arm is around Carly in this picture.
You look quite enamored with her.
You're blowing it way out of proportion. I would guess that was at Bobbin, a nearby stomping ground. I think Nick was trying to endear himself to one of her friends. I wasn't dating her or anything.
There were other pictures of the two of you together.
Those were probably the only times we ever hung out. Carly was one of the great beauties on campus. Everyone would flirt with her at parties, but in my case, it was nothing serious, just simple college fun. This is ridiculous. I've gone all these years with people wondering whether I hurt the woman I loved, but are you seriously suggesting I'm some kind of serial killer?
Alex let the pause linger. By the time he spoke, Jeff was pale.
There's something I need to tell you, Jeff. The police found a woman's body this morning, buried beneath a parking lot that was under construction at the time Amanda disappeared.
Jeff's mouth opened and closed like a marionette's.
Is it Amanda? There's no final identification yet, but they did find what appeared to be her engagement ring.
Sempera Mamus? He muttered.
That was the engraving.
Yes, Alex said. That's the same ring. And that wasn't the only piece of jewelry. The police also found a matching wedding band. The one you said was last seen in your hotel room.
Jeff rose from his chair, ripped off his mic, and walked quickly off the set. 52. An hour later, Lori was pacing yet again in the living room of Alex's suite.
Lori, Alex said, obviously concerned, I've never seen you so nervous. You're going to wear a hole in the hotel carpet at this rate.
The only other people in the room were her father and Detective Henson. Jerry was out with the camera crew gathering footage of local scenery to use during the narration between interviews. Lori had asked Grace to watch Timmy so her father could be here while they met with Detective Henson.
You're right, Lori said. I am a bundle of nerves. Shouldn't we tell Sandra and Walter about this latest development?
So far, only her production team and Jeff knew about both the significance of the wedding band found with Amanda's body and Jeff's connection to Carly Romano. Leo grabbed Lori's hand abruptly as she passed his wing chair.
Stop pacing. The detective here knows what she's doing, and for what it's worth, I'd make the same call. When you're working a case, you can't always tell the family everything in real time.
Alex had been able to extract some helpful information from Jeff. He had admitted knowing Carly, and he had locked himself into a very specific story about the wedding bands. But Detective Henson couldn't make an arrest until the medical examiner's office completed the autopsy that might produce physical evidence connecting him to her death. Detective Henson had changed back into her black pantsuit.
I've got police officers in plain clothes all over the property, and I have Jeff Hunter's name flagged with all the airlines, rental car companies, and Amtrak. If he tries to flee before his scheduled flight back to New York, we'll know.
And what about when he's back in New York? Alex asked.
We'll deal with that when the time comes, but trust me, we're not going to lose sight of him.
Good, Leo said. If we're right, Jeff's gotten away with too much for too long.
There's one thing I still don't understand, Lori said, her pacing commencing once again. Was Jeff really the one to call the police? But why would he tip us off to the location of the body? He had to have known that the wedding band would only call attention to him.
I thought of that too, Alex said. But I've had clients who are extremely calculating about the costs and benefits of the choices they make. Jeff may have been confident that the ring wouldn't be enough proof for a conviction, because it's not. But now that Amanda's body has been found, he can finally inherit her trust fund without having to sue to declare her dead, which would have made him look like a real heel in the public eye.
The account was worth $2 million more than 5 years ago, Henson said.
Leo let out a whistle.
It's probably considerably more by now.
Lori said, is there any way to analyze the voice on the tape to see if it's Jeff's?
Henson shook her head. You can buy a voice distorter in any spy shop.
As I told you earlier, the caller could be a woman for all we know. We traced the call, and it came from a burner, a throwaway phone, no name attached to it. According to the cell site information, the call originated through a cell tower 2 blocks from here, so any of the people you are interviewing could have made the phone call. So, nothing helpful, Henson continued.
Can I trust the three of you to keep all this to yourselves? Don't make me regret this.
Lori assured her that they would not let on that the police were closing in on Jeff. But as she shut the door behind the detective, she just couldn't picture Jeff making that phone call. They had to be missing something.
As she and her father left Alex's room, she asked if he could join her for a ride in the car after taking Timmy to the water park.
No need to wait, Leo reported. I just saw Jerry, who was quite proud to have finished scouting locations with the camera crew early. Much to my surprise, Jerry announced he'd been looking forward the entire trip to checking out the 4-story slide Timmy keeps carrying on about.
I'll see if Jerry is joking or if he minds staying with Timmy so you can keep me company.
Dearly as I love my grandson, at 64, I'm not up to the water slides. But Lori, give yourself a break and spend your free time with Alex. I know you're done shooting for the day.
I am. But there's something I need to do, and I'd feel safer if you came along. But you have to promise that this time we do it on my terms. 53. Lori knocked on the door for the third time. I know you're home. She peered through Jeremy Carroll's front window, but couldn't see anyone in the living room.
At least it didn't look as though he had thrown out his photo collection.
She stepped toward the edge of the front porch to make sure that her father was staying put in the rental car parked across the street. She wanted him within view in case things went terribly wrong, but she thought she had a better chance of getting Jeremy to open up if she talked to him alone. She'd seen a curtain part when she walked up the driveway. She wasn't going to leave until he answered. "I know you didn't hurt Amanda," she cried out. "I'm sorry that we were so pushy last time. But I think you want to help. Please." The front door cracked open by an inch. Jeremy peered out from beneath unkempt brown bangs.
"Are you sure you're alone?" he asked fearfully.
"Yes, I promise." He opened the door fully and stood back, allowing Lori to step inside. She hoped she wasn't making a terrible mistake.
"I didn't like that man who was with you," he said once she was settled next to him on his living room sofa. "He seemed like a police officer or something."
"He's actually my father," she said, allowing that to serve as a response. "You were right to worry that people would be suspicious of you if they found out you were taking photographs of Amanda and her friends when they weren't looking. But I understand now. You take pictures because you care about people. You want to see them in their most honest moments, not just when they're smiling for the camera."
"Yes, that's exactly right. I don't want to see the faces that people put on for the world. I want reality."
"You said you got rid of the photographs you took of your neighbors once you realized that they were truly upset. What about the pictures of Amanda?" He stared at her, blinking. He still didn't trust her. "I saw you in the hotel surveillance footage. She walked past you, and you turned around to follow her. You had your camera. You're an artist. You must have taken a few snapshots."
"They're not snapshots, like some amateur Instagram account. They're my art."
"I'm sorry, Jeremy. I didn't mean to use the wrong words. But Amanda was a beautiful, and more importantly, smart and complicated woman. Did you know that she had been diagnosed with a very serious disease?" He shook his head. "Hodgkin's lymphoma. She was terribly ill. She lost 20 pounds and could barely get out of bed most days."
"That sounds terrible," he said sadly.
"It's a cancer of the immune system. It keeps your body